Extrasensory perception, ESP. I do believe we all have it. Not all of us use it. In a moment, we'll talk with Leo Kim about that and take your calls on Coast to Coast AM. Leo, have you done much studying and investigating into the phenomenon of ESP, extrasensory perception?
Well, not personally, except for researching the book, but quite familiar with it. Fascinating field. It is discussed in the book as to what might be the phenomenon that could scientifically explain the phenomenon of ESP.
What does your gut tell you about it?
Well, actually, it was Brian Josephson. He was the Nobel laureate for physics in 2001. He suggested that it's entanglement. And entanglement, which is a phenomenon in non-locality, and this is one of the weird things that happens in quantum theory, is he believes that provides a mechanism to explain telepathy, and he was criticized by many, many scientists by even mentioning ESP and that there might be a rationale, but he was very open and forthright in talking about it.
Leo, my late aunt, Dr. Shafika, she was a psychiatrist, mm-hmm. and went to Oxford University and ended up setting up her practice in L.A. Mm-hmm. She moved her entire practice into the field of the mind. She was obsessed with it. She studied it. She digested it. She died tragically, but I truly believe she would have been one of the giants of the field had she stayed alive. But she was a believer in ESP. She was a believer that humankind had this incredible ability to do these things, not only with their mind on a physical end, but also with their subconscious without the mind. And, you know, she was into some great things. Her book, Breakthrough to Creativity, I thought was just revolutionary for this field. It's genetic. It runs in my blood, Leo.
Well, yeah, you know that the Department of Defense and the CIA had had contracted studies at Stanford, and mm-hmm. and it got declassified, I think, in the mid-90s or late 90s. So Russell Targ and others have actually written their accounts of these studies.
Yeah, many of them have been on this program. I still think part of me believes that the government's doing this without them. Somehow they went in a different direction. I don't know why they would have stopped.
Well, I don't know why it would stop either, because it was so effective. If you look at what actually was done in these studies and the ability to see in missile silos and buildings on the other side of the world in Russia, and later it was proven with actual photographs compared to the drawings that these ESP people saw, is just incredible.
Calls with you now for the hour. Adam, let's go to Burbank, California. First-time caller. Hey, Adam, how are you?
I'm great, George. Thank you for taking my call.
Super.
I'm actually calling because I get tuned in a little bit late into the program. I hope my question is relevant. I recently just had a son. My wife and I are considering, we're talking about getting his vaccinations and stuff. You were just recently talking about how you don't take the flu shots, and I'm kind of on the same plane where I'm not really sure, you know, what I'm taking and trusting whether or not I want to be taking it. Mm-hmm. And I've heard a lot about how mercury are being put in these shots, and like how it's a possible link to how autism is like so incredibly common these days. I was just wondering if you'd heard anything about that, or you know, what you think I might do for that.
Well, couple things, Adam. First and foremost, if you go to our website, coasttocoastam.com, in the search engine, type in Len Horowitz, Dr. Horowitz, Horowitz, and go to his website. He's got volumes of information for you. Number two, this is a decision between you and your wife, so don't listen to us in terms of what we do. And then, Leo, as far as you're concerned, what do you think of vaccines?
Well, I guess the CDC says, especially if you're in the high-risk groups, then you ought to consider it. But as you stated, George, there is nothing without risk, and there is the possibility of the negative consequences. Now, hopefully,
mercury is in some of these vaccines, isn't it?
Yeah, and you always wonder about contaminations. You wonder about heavy metals. You wonder about a lot of things. I don't believe there's significant amounts of mercury in the flu vaccine, but, you know, I could be wrong, and they could always be contaminated. But I would say the vast majority of them would be okay.
Well, I gave him some resources there, so you can go and do some homework on that. Adam, thanks for the call. George in Portland, Oregon. West of the Rockies, I love Portland. Hey, George, how you doing?
Hi, George. Leo, how are you tonight?
Great.
Good.
Okay. When you were saying the spirit controls the mind, or how did you say that? The mind controls the...
I say that the mind has the capability of rewiring the brain.
Rewiring the brain. So if we did that on a planetary basis, possibly we could have heaven on Earth, right? If we could speak of, you know.
Close to it.
Well, you know, it's more fun when you're playing army as a kid with your soldiers playing in the dirt. It's more fun building the fort than actually the accomplishment. On the first day that we saw we were all going to do this on the planet, it would, like, be the end of suffering, the joy of knowing what's coming, what we're doing, like building the fort to play, you know, like little children happy. I mean, it's possible, just the thought, like you said, collectively.
Well, George, it's an interesting question you bring up. I mean, we've spent billions to put people in space. We've spent billions to build particle colliders, but we really haven't harnessed the power of the mind. And that's certainly as individuals. And there's been very few studies, scientific studies, and basically there's zero funding for it, for collective a utilization of the mind. So you bring up a very interesting thought.
In a perfect world, Leo, it would be great if everybody collectively could think good things.
Mm-hmm.
Things would change. Let's go to you, Bill, in Victorville, California. Hey, Bill, go ahead.
Good evening, gentlemen. George, thanks for taking my call. And
for sure.
Dr. Kim? Just before the end of last hour, you both talked about the Western diet and how we need to change it. And God knows I'm one of the ones that needs a change. George, I'm your age. I'm 58. I'm 6 foot, about 330 pounds. And I eat the Western diet because of monetary concerns.
Well, you got to change. No, you can, but you can work at it, Bill. There's some things you could do once you get over the hump of the hunger feelings when you're
right.
Changing. Because darn it, I want you around for another 25 years listening.
Well,
to
I want to listen to the program for that too. That's
absolutely.
That's really my question, because you know you can go to a grocery store, and you can eat the Western diet. I can stock up on this and that, and. For very reasonable prices, but if I try to buy the good stuff, the healthier foods, skip the red meat and this and that, boy, that food bill goes up significantly. And George, you know, when you're and I'm not complaining, this is just the way it is. I'm on a very limited income.
I understand.
So about $1,400 a month, and that includes paying rent and utilities and buying food and everything else. When you look at some of the prices of the healthier food, you're looking at 2, 3, 4 times what you're paying for just the normal things that you might buy at a grocery store. And I'm just stymied by the fact that I'd like to do better, but how the heck do you do it?
Well, first of all, I think you don't have to shell out the extra money for organically grown. It turns out that a lot of the organically grown is shipped in from other countries, even China, where, you know, it's easier to say it's organic and ship it here and get more money than to not. And it's more likely to be fresh food if you just buy it at a farmer's market or wherever. But if you cut down on total meats and you also watch the kinds of carbohydrates that spike your sugar. So you buy the sprouted grains, and that's your principal source of carbohydrates, and you eat fruits and vegetables, you're, one, going to have a and you avoid processed foods that includes fats and oils, butter and cream, et cetera. You're going to automatically move towards your ideal weight, which you weighed in high school, and you're going to feel a lot healthier. And the other thing that's going to happen is you're going to be consuming less of the omega-6 fatty acid, which is horrible. It's the one that causes inflammation. As you increase things like flax seeds, that's going to increase your omega-3s, and that's going to really, really help your immune system and your overall health.
Great. And you'll feel better, and your energy level will zoom.
Yes.
Thank you, Leo, for that advice. Bill, good luck to you, and start working on it. That's the important thing. Anthony in San Diego. Hey, Anthony, how you doing down there? Well, it would be nice if I would hit the button. Yeah, there you go.
Oh, okay. I'd say thank you for taking my call, and I would like to just thank you again for your show. With EST and whatnot, I would like to ask how you all would explain David Blaine and all of the things that he does. And second part to one of my questions is, with all of the STDs out there like AIDS and herpes that cannot be cured right now, what would be your answer or weighing in on that? What could be done, or what could be tried, and what have you?
Prevention.
Well, as far as the Criss Angels of life, they're good. They are incredible illusionists, as good as anything I've ever seen. But what do you mean by prevention, Leo?
Oh, I guess if you talk about STDs or AIDS or whatever, the best advice is prevention of those diseases. With regard to magic acts, though, I don't personally consider that. ESP.
No. But, you know, back to the AIDS, what about building your immune system?
Absolutely. And not everybody exposed to a particular disease, AIDS included, develops the disease. So the immune system can help thwart it. There's no question about that.
Mike in Birmingham, Alabama, you're on with us on Coast to Coast. Michael.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I appreciate first-time caller.
Good to have you with us.
First time I've actually listened to this station here on Midnight. So my thing is, I'm talking about I heard you talk about extraordinary claims, man's extraordinary evidence. And I've been on a truth hunt. Basically, I got into what the belief. And the secret, you know, laws of attraction and all these things here, until I started, like, I just wanted to eliminate all the bull and just get down to the truth. And I don't know if you're familiar with the book, The Evidence That Demands a Verdict by Josh McDowell.
Yes.
I started getting into that, and, it makes sense. Everything seems to go right back to, as far as science, cause and effect reflects, you know, sort of the search that we have for the desire, the craving, to wonder why we're here, you know. And you look at everything, even down to the smallest matter, everything seems to be a cause and effect. The whole reason we got science. And, I just started putting the truth on there, and I just sort of like wanted to know what, Leo's spin is on that. What do you believe, really? I mean, I've heard you talk, but I'm not getting a good direction of, like, exactly where, you know.
Well, first of all, I understand your quandary. When I started on this quest, I picked up a lot of reading material, but it was really Not of the quality that would stand up to scientists, peer review journals and top journals. So what I tried to do in my book is to have notes and bibliography, which really referenced Nobel Prize winners, leaders in their fields, with the actual journal articles, and in top areas. What do I believe? I believe that's what's out there. What's really out and what really exists in the universe is mind and spirit. That's what I believe.
Do you also, Lynn McTaggart, for example, writes of the field. So many people have come on this program, Leo, to talk about an ether in the universe that connects everything. Do you believe, are you a subscriber to that?
Well, these are metaphors. These are words to try to describe what's out there. And yes, nobody's going to argue that there's a field out there. And I think the physicists would say the field is more important than the energy or the matter or anything else. The problem is, since Lynn McTaggart wrote that book, all this other stuff hit. Parallel universes, hidden dimensions, dark matter, dark energy. And so when you really think about it, it's everybody is using their own metaphors. And what I would suggest is try to imagine for a day, I think most people couldn't do it, that what's really out there is spirit and mind. And, you sit in a desk and you wonder, well, I sit in a chair and you wonder, why don't I fall through it then? But that's an interesting exercise. And I've been told that people who experienced a near-death experience, when they come back, they have a hard time because they basically know that everything is spirit and mind. And they have a hard time relating to the world as we're conditioned to regard it.
As you look into the future for science and spirituality, what do you see there?
Oh, what do I see? I think what I think is going to happen is science will continue to make a lot of changes to our lifestyle and health care. It'll help with our energy and our environmental problems. And I also expect that the revelations of the 21st century regarding the big questions will expose the mental and spiritual nature of our universe. I think science is likely to discover new particles,
sure,
and create some new mind-boggling new theories. And certainly it will create incomprehensible jargon. But in the end, the most important ingredient, which is love and spirit, will remain hidden to the scientist's instruments.
All right, Leo, will you stay with us? Because we're going to come right back with final phone calls for you in just a moment, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, we'll have Sound Off Open Lines. It'll be your hour. But when we come back, we'll take final phone calls with Leo Kim on Coast to Coast AM. Leo, what do you do with this work, this book, Healing the Rift? I mean, do you go to speaking engagements? Do you battle it out with mainstream scientists? What happens?
Maybe all of the above. But yes, I do speaking engagements. And I really want to get the word out that this is going to be an exciting century. The 21st century, I think, is going to reveal a lot about our world. And I think there's a good chance that science will be moving a lot closer to recognizing the spiritual nature of our universe.
What pushes you, Leo? What drives you?
What drives me is I see so many rifts that we have in our world. You're seeing it in this election year. I see the scientists worshiping the false gospels and really the rift it creates. And I just think I see so many rifts. This is one that I can do something about. And I think it's really important. I really don't think we need to think one way in our everyday life, that we live in a material world, and then when somebody gets sick or somebody's afraid of dying or somebody just died, that we then automatically switch our brain into a spiritual mode. I think it's all the same. I think we need to reframe our thinking, and if we do, and I think if people realize that the reality is that science and spirituality can be merged, I think it will resolve a lot of other issues.
Let's go to the phones again. First-time caller, Kevin in Springfield, Illinois. Hey, Kevin, go ahead.
Oh, hi, Leo. I wanted to, first of all, say good morning to everyone.
Sure. Thank you.
And commend you for your courage for speaking up against basically what mainstream science doesn't encourage too much.
Thank you.
I wanted to get back to some of the things you said earlier. You explained how modern science is seeming to begin to confirm what was ancient knowledge. And one of the things that still exists from that ancient knowledge has to do with traditional native peoples, indigenous knowledge that tied us much more closely to the earth before we had all of this technology and the Industrial Revolution and everything that's unfolded to our materialism that you have referred to. The native peoples and ancient wisdom, they had people such as the Quiro Incan, children of the sun, remnants of the Mayan people and the Hopi of North America. They speak of a universal law of life, which, as it was described to their people before science, carries an aura of myth. But some of the elders that I've spoken to said that was just our way of understanding things before science. Science is the newcomer. But the basic knowledge that we may have lost in coming to the materialism that we have today, the physicalism, is the native peoples have told us that very much the way you described it. You spoke of mind and spirit filling creation. Native peoples have said exactly that. They said this is a living universe. All of creation, all of the material universe is filled with consciousness to some degree. And our Mother Earth herself is a living entity, something that we've forgotten in this age. All of our, everything we have in this life, all of our food, our clothing and shelter and the spirit of life itself, according to native peoples, comes from our Mother Earth. Power, energy, everything. How does that fit with what you put into your book?
Oh, it's perfect what you're saying. I did not want to focus on just one or two religions. I didn't want to focus just on one or two areas of the world. I wanted to include it's in my chapter on spirituality, religion, and science. I wanted to discuss the Mesoamericans, the American Indian, the Australian Aborigines, the African tribes people, the people from all over the world as to what were their spiritual beliefs. And I chronicled that in that chapter, along with religions. And what I was looking for is a commonality in what they were saying. And whether it goes back 10,000 years or 5,000 years or 2,000 years, but these are all ancient traditions in all of these people. And I did not want to, ignore a whole continent or a whole area geographically or spiritual culture-wise. And I wanted to include that and in my comparisons of science, spirituality, and religion. So I absolutely agree exactly with what you're saying.
You know, what's amazing with all this is ancient traditions, they've had this for centuries, yet the West is still far from it.
Yes, and you know, it's interesting. What the scientists seem to demand is reproducibility on experiments. And I find that remarkable in that why isn't the fact that all of these people from different times, at different cultures, from every corner of the earth, coming up with the same spiritual wisdom? And isn't that as reproducible as you can get?
Probably is. Let's go to California, Temecula. Daniel, you're on with us on Coast to Coast.
Yes, good evening. Great program, very interesting. I have something that I'd like to bring your attention. I had the opportunity to listen to a physician, a Dr. Mark Eastman, talking about this subject that's being discussed tonight. And he pointed out in the there's a scientific journal, Nature, which I believe is on par with Scientific American, had an article in 1996 in which they did a survey of scientists, and they asked them three questions. Do you believe there's a God, a personal God? Do you believe in life after death? And do you believe that we have a soul? And it was interesting, 40% answered in the affirmative. And the point of that is, I don't think it's an open and shut case about this issue that we're talking about tonight, about the existence of God or a spirit. I think many, many people, even the scientific community, have that same instinct or belief down deep inside, even though they can't maybe prove it or put it in a test tube. But I think sometimes in the scientific community, what happens is that if you are open about it and you try to discuss it with an open mind, you may be ostracized somewhat by your peers, or you may suffer other consequences. So I admire the courage of Leon to step out and do this on a scientific basis. And I'm the kind of person, I'm not out trying to prove anything. Whatever it is what it is. But I think if we approach it in an open-mindedness and keep our minds open and not shut our minds. And lastly, I'll say this, and then I'd like Leon and you, George, to respond. If we and I were in the same room together, and this is, again, another idea of Dr. Mark Eastman. These are not my ideas. I'm not trying to plagiarize. I'm giving credit where credit's due. We were in a room talking together. You couldn't see my mind, and I couldn't see yours. But if I told you you didn't exist because I couldn't see your mind, you'd think I was a fool. So in the same way, just because we can't see something or touch it, call it God, call it many of the laws of physics, we're not really in a position sometimes to deny their existence simply because our sense perception is such that we can't put a handle on it or put it in a test tube. And with that, I'll close.
And I agree with that. I don't see China. I don't see Russia. Doesn't mean it's not there. Doesn't mean it doesn't function and contribute to whatever's going on.
Your point is very well taken, and that's why I felt that I had to include the chapter that I did called Misperceptions, as to what is it that we actually perceive, what is really out there. You know, there's no such thing as color. It's the way our brain sort of paints in a color to make it more understandable, like we sort of color in a map to make certain countries or states stand out. There's so much that we need to recognize that our brains translate for us so it's more understandable. It isn't what's really out there. It's just a representation that makes it comprehensible to ourselves.
Let's go to Tom in the Beaver Falls, Pennsylvania, east of the Rockies. Go ahead, Tom.
Hello, guys. It's nice to be able to speak with you tonight. I was curious. I think maybe a year or so ago, I had stumbled across a Pittsburgh paper, and there was an article in it about researchers in Canada, and they were able to produce the near-death experience in conscious people. I didn't get a chance to finish reading the article. When I came back, the paper was gone. I would be curious to know if...
In what kind of people did they...
In people that were conscious. Now, I'm not sure exactly how they did this, how they affected the brain to do that. I didn't get a chance to finish reading the article. But my question is that, you know, have you heard about it, and what are the implications? Because, you know, if there is a phenomena that accompanies that experience that raises a lot of questions, it would seem to me that we might have a technological door that could be opened for people.
Well, that's something I haven't heard of. The near-death experience phenomenon in terms of the studies of this cardiologist in 2001 and several others
right.
have clearly shown that it's a different experience than, say, mind-altering drugs or other sensory games you can put on your body and your mind. It's totally different. So I haven't heard that.
Thanks, Tom. Let's go to Elderwood, California. First time caller. Hey, Juanita, you're up with us. Go ahead. Hello, Juanita. Gotta let her go. You only get a couple chances, and then off you go into the sunset. You know, Leo, the work you've done, I've got to admire you for it because, you know, you are in some form or fashion sticking your neck out in order to get this message across. Do you get into any running arguments with scientists?
Yes. You know, I think there are the scientists that are open-minded, and then there are those that really feel quite uncomfortable. I think most, not only scientists, I think if you bring spirituality into the office place, people become uncomfortable. So
you bring politics into the office place, they become uncomfortable.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Although I think you'll find more politic discussions in office places than by maybe an order of magnitude than you will spirituality discussions.
True. That's a good point. Absolutely. Well, you know, where are we headed with all this, Leo? I mean, is it going to get accepted? Are we going to be taught this? Will we be trained? Or will it just continue to, you know, just float away?
Well, you know, let me quote astronomer and physicist who basically says that you know, it's the world out there is spiritual, and it is mental. And his name was Richard Henry, and he's a professor of physics and astronomy at Johns Hopkins University. And he actually published this in Nature in 2005. He says, let me read it here. Physicists shy from the truth because the truth is so alien to everyday physics. The wave function is collapsed into a particle, and simply by your human mind see nothing. One benefit of switching humanity to a correct perception of the world is the resulting joy of discovering the mental nature of the universe. Beyond the acquisition of this perception, physics can no longer help. And he goes on to state that the universe is mental and spiritual. So, as was stated by your previous caller, Nature is one of the premier journals in the world, scientific journals in the world. And this was published there.
Have you ever thought that the universe was alive?
The universe is alive. Well, yep. It gets to the point of what is living and what is alive. And yes, I think we live in a milieu, whatever the stuff is out there that is preconditioned for life. And we could argue and speculate on how life originated. We could speculate and argue about what is life. But the probabilities, and I discuss it in the book, of really creating life from the early stuff on Earth, you know, one famous 20th century scientist said, is about the same probability of a 747 being assembled by a tornado whizzing through a junkyard. And that's how improbable we are a result of.
Let's go to Juanita. We finally got our first-time caller. Go ahead, Juanita.
I wanted to talk about an experience that I had had,
mm-hmm.
Which I was about 23, 24 years old, and it was an out-of-body experience. And I had a presence come alongside of me, and I was asleep at night, and we rose up through the rafters of the house. I could feel them. You know, I separated from my body. I could feel the, it wasn't painful, but I could feel like I was going through the rafters, through the attic, up through the roof of the house. And then it was like everything was really in a real type of a bright light, brighter light than what just normally the sun is like. And when I went on with the spirit beside me, I could look back at the earth and I could see all the atmosphere of the earth, just like as if I was in a spaceship, you know, how the astronauts looked back and what they saw.
And did it look real to you?
Oh, very real, very alive. And then as I'm looking out and seeing all the rest of the stars and the universe and everything, and I still felt the comfort of this presence right alongside my right side, but I wasn't allowed to turn my spiritual head or my soul's head or what, to look at the being, but I felt the presence just very, very real right there. And as I was going on further and further away from the earth, it was pretty soon like I got so far away from the earth, I really didn't see the earth, but I saw another earth like way, way, way far out. But the atmosphere was all like the planet Earth. And I said to the being beside me, I said, well, look, there's a planet over there. It looks a lot like the way the Earth did. Is there life over there? And it said, the spirit being next to me said, Juanita, what is that to you? Can't you see how much more important your soul is than all of those other things you live to do?
Interesting. Interesting indeed. Leo, we are out of time. I want to thank you for being on the program. More importantly, healing the rift, a breakthrough. Good work, my friend.
Thank you.
And your website, once again, is?
HealingTheRiftBook.com. And you
Simple
can buy the
enough.
Book right on the website.
There you go. Thank you. That's Leo Kim. Now, when I come right back in just a moment, sound off open lines. So just get ready to just get it off your chest. I'm George Norrie, and we'll be back in a moment right here on Coast to Coast AM.